Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, we've had a lot of former people on the radio show here lately in the last couple of months. We've had a former abortionist. We had former abortion clinic workers. I did an interview earlier today that you'll hear on Friday with Abby Johnson, a former Planned Parenthood clinic manager. And today, my good friend Walt Heyer, who has not been in the studio. It's been a few years, but Walt Heyer and his wife, KC, who's in from out of town. They live out west. And Walt is adding another former person. This is just the former show, apparently. Walt Heyer, a former transgendered woman, meaning Walt's actually a man, but he desired to be a woman, and that's a whole other story, which we'll get to. But Walt Heyer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Nice to be back in the old East Coast here.
Yes, you're back east, a beautiful part of the country, and it's great to have you here. And do you ever get sick of that? Former transgender, does that get old for you?
No, you know, it just kind of identifies, an individual who got lost in the swamp of this whole gender maze of ideas where people think that they're changing gender and go through hormones and surgery and identify as something that they can never become. And then the fortunate ones wake up and realize, man, it's a big mistake.
Yeah.
Number one, women are much more than just a man taking hormones and rearranging some genitalia.
You think so?
I think so. And so when I woke up, I came to the Lord and was redeemed and restored. And so that was in 1990. So I've been back pretty near 30 years.
Yeah, amazing. And and there's a lot of people, of course, that remember you, and you've been on the show a number of times, and you blessed so many of us when you guys were here in town a few years back. I think it was 3 years ago now.
It was.
When you were here for Call to Worship, which was just awesome, and it's a testimony that people don't get to hear very often. But we have a lot of new station affiliates and people like that. So if you could just unpack it as much as you want. This goes all the way back to when Walt was about 4 years of age. And remember, Casey, when we had Walt's wife is here. Remember when I had the purple dress on the stage?
Yo,
I'll never forget this, because when you first walked in that day, I was like, oops, because Casey's response was not positive, encouraging. It wasn't like a K-Love moment, but it turned out to be great. I mean, I think it was kind of nerve-wracking a little bit, but the purple dress. Anyway.
Yeah, the purple dress. That was when I walked in and saw the purple dress. I have to admit, I was shocked. I had written out this tremendous, powerful presentation in great detail. It was probably one of the best things I've ever written. I knew it was going to just blow people
yes.
out of their seats.
And
I saw the purple dress, and I'm going, everything I wrote goes out the window. I got to redo this thing. But it was really one of those moments where it just smacked me in the face. But the purple dress was very appropriate because – you know, here we're from the purple dress to today is 74 years.
Wow, amazing.
I'm 78 years old. And so 74 years ago, my grandma made me a purple chiffon dress. And this was our little secret when I was at grandma's house. She was babysitting me when my mom and dad would go off camping for the weekend. And for whatever reason, you know, she was a seamstress, and I took an interest in what she was doing. I would rest on her sewing machine and watch her making dresses, and she took that as an interest or a curiosity, and then she made this purple dress, and she fashioned it for me because that's what she knew how to do.
Yeah.
I don't think she had any idea what the implications or the consequences or anything that would result from
yeah.
that. And she thought it was very benign, and she just gushed over how cute I looked as a little individual boy at four. And what's funny about that is that I realized only later, because it takes a long time for us to grow up and for our minds to mature and to begin to process things. At 4 years old, I had no idea what was going on. All I wanted to do was satisfy grandma, whatever grandma,
yeah.
you know, that was just kind of the deal. And so today, as I look back, what I really realize is that what impacted me the most at that moment in that purple dress, what Grandma was saying to me is there was something wrong with me as a boy. And so you have this clear distinction of there must be something wrong with me. And that began this thing that this was before the words gender dysphoria, transgender. They didn't even have them available to us to use. But it was powerful. And in a young four-year-old psyche, you're telling the boy in these very vivid ways that there's something wrong with you, that you actually are better off as a girl.
Right.
If you're going to be affirmed, if you're going to be loved on, you've got to be a girl. So that seed of disenchantment with being a boy was planted. And so as this began to work over 2.5 years, we kept the secret, and she kept dressing me in the dress. And then I took the dress home. And because I wanted that affirmation,
sure.
Even when I got home.
We all want to be loved and appreciated.
Two of the greatest
and built
things,
up.
Right. I mean, I still like to be affirmed and
sure, of course.
Right? I mean, that's kind of that's one of the things we all want. And I think that's instructive for us today to realize that's why they tell the advocates, tell the parents, just support them, do it, you know. And so what we have with Grandma, she just built this within me where all of a sudden I wasn't who I thought I was,
yeah.
But I was getting affirmed as a girl. When my parents found the purple dress, then the life began to start to unfold, and then I became responsible for letting the secret out.
Yeah.
And that's where things started to crumble, Steve.
And then how many years did you spend cross-dressing before you actually went through sex reassignment surgery?
38 more years.
Man. And so how old were you when you went through sex reassignment surgery?
42.
Yeah. Did your grandmother live? I never asked you this. Did your grandmother live long enough to see what happened?
No.
She had no clue.
No, she had no clue.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, in fact, most of my dad didn't have a clue. He never knew about the fall of my life because it was 21 years old when he'd passed away. And my mother did, but my mother never really liked me.
Hmm.
And I don't know if it was because of this issue with Grandma. I never could figure that out, but we just had this, we're like oil and water.
Yeah.
And so we just kind of went all through life that way. I was sort of disgusting to her no matter what. So so it was 42 years old
wow.
when I finally came to that place where I went to one of those great gender specialists.
Right, of course, because they're going to help you. And you're finally going to be the person that you were meant to be.
Wrong,
yeah. And so we're going to talk about that. We'll hear the rest of Walt's story. Then we're going to talk about all the ways that God has been using him ever since and speaking the truth into this situation. We'll talk about Equality Act, H.R. 5 up in Congress. We're going to talk about what's going on in athletics. Transgenderism is all over the place. Here we are again, just like the gay marriage fight. We'll be right back.
So what are we waiting for?
Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. A good friend of mine. It's just been a great blessing in my life, my family's life, and in the life of the body of Christ. And even expanded outside the church and to the greater conversation in America on the issue of transgenderism, transgendered. And oftentimes we're kind of talking about it as people that are on the outside looking in. In this case, Walt Heyer has been down that road. He was just sharing his story. Started when he was age 4 and his grandmother, I think kind of innocently, dressing him up in a purple chiffon dress, and those seeds grew over time. And you were, Walt, how old were you when you went through sex reassignment surgery?
42,
cross-dressing for years before that. And then we'll hear in a second about coming out of that. And then Walt's been a champion for the truth ever since. But take us to the point where what were you thinking at the time, Walt, that if I go through with this, mm-hmm. which is an excruciating process physically, right. The surgery and everything that happens we're not going to talk about details on the air, but if you go spend 5 minutes on Google, you'll understand this is excruciating. It's a huge thing to go through. But what are you thinking as you're putting yourself in that position?
Well, you got to realize when you go back to 4 years old, the purple dress, realizing that there's something wrong with being a boy. That's the first thing. So you're working at 4 years old, and in the rest of your life, you're still stuck at 4 years old, and there's something wrong with you, and you're trying to fix what's wrong with you, and you become convinced that you were just the wrong person.
Yeah.
And there's nothing out there that flies in the face of it. There's, you know, this is all you get. This is where we go. You, even today, it's even worse. I mean, so I didn't have any avenues when I was, you know, about 1954. So that would have been about 10 years after the purple dress. Then there was Christine Jorgensen, big headline, you know, Marine changes gender. That was the first time I saw the word transgender. Mm. And then I thought, well, that must be me. But again, keep in mind, there's nothing contrary to that. Nobody,
right,
nobody
there's no out, other message.
Nobody came out and said, you know, Christine Jorgensen is a fake fraud person. You know, this shouldn't have been done. It was a mess. But no, they celebrate it. And so you begin to, these seeds continue to grow.
Yeah.
And then as I went for psychotherapy, the therapist in those days in the 50s, 60s, and 70s go, I don't know. You know, I don't know what to tell you. And so you're left in this vacuum of no opposing people pushing down and saying, this isn't real. This what happened to you caused you to dissociate or to not believe that you really are who God made you to be. And people weren't speaking the truth.
Yeah.
And they're afraid of it. They're still afraid of it. And so as that went on, you began to develop. I got married and had children. And I was married for 16 years.
Beforehand, before you went through the
before I went through
surgery.
It, I told my first wife at the time, you know, that I was struggling with this. But, you know, in our naive minds, we think, well, getting married is going to solve it. You know, I wasn't sure. Homosexual. I just had this gender identity issue. But what we don't really grasp, I really hope that the people listening today will understand, these seeds are planted deep. And it takes extensive psychotherapy to pull this apart, unpack it, and begin to realize that you were damaged by this affirmation.
Here's a controversial question. Would you put transgenderism and homosexuality, same-sex attraction, somehow in the same camp?
No.
How are they different?
Okay. Well, I mean, I think that they're both have issues that happened in early childhood. But the 95% of the people that hundreds of people I work with were never homosexual. They were sexually abused by somebody. And what I have found out, Steve, a very interesting thing is that young boys like myself, because I was sexually abused at the age of 7 and 8 by my uncle. And what I have found and learned, the vast majority of people who come out as a heterosexual man who identifies as a woman that was sexually abused, wants to rid himself of his genitalia. Now listen to this. This is really key component. So that they will never be sexually abused again. Because they see that component of their body as what caused them to be abused.
Got to get rid of that.
You got to get rid of what...
Wow.
So it almost becomes a safety way of protecting themselves.
Yeah.
It's foolish and nonsense.
Yeah. But it just shows you mentally, emotionally, psychologically, how inverted and mixed up everything gets.
Exactly. And then the women that we've worked with who become men were sexually abused and identify as a man as a way to protect them from being sexually abused again. So you have, in both cases, much of this is about sexual abuse. No one is born transgender. Let's understand that.
Yeah.
It doesn't come. You don't come out of the womb as a transgender. I call it a childhood developmental disorder that's encouraged by an environment.
And is that almost universal? It goes all the way back to childhood for most adult transgender people.
I'm seeing.
And now we're encouraging that, of course. As it's four years of age, 8 years of age. This happened at a local school here in the area in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I think a fourth grader, and they made all the kids clap because she had like this coming out day. Where, okay, we're not going to call her this. We're going to call him that. And they had all the, now let's all pray for how brave your classmate is.
Well, I guarantee you that I could take a child in a family that was born. Give me two families and two boys, and I can make one a girl, and I can make the other one a healthy
boy. Just by programming. Wow.
This is what we're doing. That's what the affirmation does. It programs them to think there's something wrong with them, that they're we're using all these words, all these affirmations, as a way to program them and actually destroy their life.
Yeah.
It's childhood abuse
to
affirm a child in a cross-gender identity.
Well, we wouldn't do it with any other mental illness if they had I've said this before. You walk into an insane asylum out in the middle of wherever, and there's some guy with his hand in his shirt, and he comes up to you and says, "Hello, I'm Napoleon Bonaparte."
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time having a conversation with him about, well, call me Napoleon. You're not Napoleon Bonaparte. That's not even possible, okay? Right. And you wouldn't argue that, but in this case, we do. Now we're saying, oh, well, just because he says he's Napoleon Bonaparte, you have a moral obligation, now a legal obligation in some places, to call him what he wants to be called, which is Napoleon. Yeah. And he isn't. Yeah, it's crazy. So you have the surgery, you're right. Recovering, and then what happened?
I lived the life in San Francisco as Laura Jensen. I worked for the FDIC. I worked for the Postal Service. I had an apartment. I lived, quote, the life. And I started studying psychology at UC Santa Cruz, and I started cracking open some books. And one of the first books I looked at, it had a story in there about a boy who became a girl after his mother passed away. And in this documentary that they had in there talked about separation anxiety. It was a term I'd never even heard before, like, mm-hmm. What's separation anxiety? And so the boy lost his mother, and so in this situation, the boy took on his mother's identity.
Wow.
As a way to feel as though his mother was still there. So keep in mind, these are deep psychological
yeah.
issues that require a psychotherapist, as I said before, to unpack and deal with and sit down so that they can relieve themselves of trying to identify as someone who they can never be.
Right. So they do not need a surgeon. They don't need estrogen. They don't need hormone treatments.
No, they need good, sound psychotherapy with somebody who can tell them why they're behaving this way, why they think this. And they can enjoy a good life if they get a good psychotherapist behind them.
How long did it take for you to Daniel chapter 4, I think, when Nebuchadnezzar came to his senses? How long did it come for you to come to your senses?
About 8 years.
8 years. And then what's been going on since then? We've got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about what's going on in Congress with the Equality Act. We'll talk about transgender athletes and Walt's friend Jamie Shoup. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Studio. They live out west. He and his wife, KC, but they live out west. They're in town for a couple days. He travels a lot, speaks all over the place, was recently at Congress up in Washington, D.C. Did you take a shower after that?
No.
When you were done there? You didn't?
No. I wanted all that. Yeah, I wanted it to stick.
Up there in the land of darkness, yes. And so talking to Walt Heyer about his own story and then down the road of transgenderism. Starting when he was 42, has sex reassignment surgery 7 or 8 years later. Dealing with reality, and he had as much reversed as you could.
Yeah.
And then you and KC have been married for how long now?
22 years.
Trick question. KC, I'm checking facts. 22 years. Is that good? Okay, that's good. Good job, Walt.
Yeah. Glad I remembered that.
And so what role did Christ play in all of this?
Well, you know, that was the magic of the whole thing because, you know, I went to one church as Laura, trying to really find my way back when I was beginning to grapple with this. And one of my favorite stories was when I went to the church, signed in as Laura, you know, and all the women gathered around the little sign-in table, and they all sat with me and listened to the pastor give the homily and all that, and it was wonderful. And, you know, went out and had the donut and coffee and got in my car. And, you know, I'm hip, slick, and cool transgender female, right? I go home and I think, this is fabulous. I'm welcome. This is cool. And that afternoon, I looked out my front window, and here comes the guy who gave the homily. The pastor's walking up, knocking on the door.
One of those, okay.
And so he stepped inside and looked me straight in the eye and says, we don't want your kind in our church.
Mm.
And so I got this big smile on my face. It didn't even bother me. And I said, really, what kind do you want? You know, because the truth is everybody in church is broken.
Right, that's right.
It's just a transgender person is showing all their brokenness is right out for everybody.
You're wearing it on the outside.
And everybody else is doing it on the computer so you can't see it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're
what
hiding
point.
It. So,
yeah.
So then I finally went, the next time I went to a church, I decided to go see the pastor in his office before I went to church and said, is it okay for a wacko like me to come to your church as Laura, and are you going to try to change me?
And were you wrestling with your reality at the time?
Not really.
Okay.
I was coming out of my alcoholism and drug addiction, which was now been like 33 years ago.
Amen.
And so I, when I talked to the pastor, I just pointedly said, are you going to try to change me back to Walt? And this big old pastor, Jeff, he leaned back in his big chair and he says, no, he says, my job's just to love you. And he says, it's God's job to change you.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, I think this is a good place to
be.
So he's still my friend. We still go to lunch together, and I still see him all these years later. So it that moment began the journey of walking back in into a life that I'd really never experienced in Christ and realized my identity is in Christ, not in transgenderism. And all this phony baloney stuff about surgery and hormones changing you, you begin to realize that, you know, I was an idiot for believing it. And, and so we started, my wife and I started this website, Sex Change Regret, 10 years ago. And we've been, we've worked with hundreds of people. We've been around the world speaking the message of truth about Christ and his redemption. And we have had the joy and pleasure of watching people come out of their transgender lives and come to reality, come to Christ, and say thank you.
Spiritual healing, physical, mental, psychological, the whole nine.
We've had three returns just in the last 3.5 months.
Wow, incredible! So, all right, so let's jump into the news of the day. So we've got the Equality Act HR 5 up in Congress. You were up there recently testifying. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Equality Act is really. I love these terms they use because they
sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's actually going to make things totally inequality for everybody. What we're going to end up with is that women will be erased. That's
right.
That's exactly what's going to happen here. If this bill passes, women will have lost every bit of ground they ever gained. Women's sports will not exist because. Universities and colleges can go out and recruit men who identify as women to play on all women's sports teams.
And all they have to say is, I identify as a woman.
That's all they got to say. They don't have to have anything.
See happening all over the place. I mean, I've got a story here, that, and they're winning all over the place. And, of course, obviously they should, and they will. And you're not going to see transgendered men, women who want to be men, competing because they can't win.
Right.
So you're always going to see the reverse of what you said. And this is just...
It's insane.
Are you shocked at the level of insanity now on this issue? Not only in America, but around the world.
It's just, as I always tell Casey, I said, my head's exploding.
Yeah.
I can't believe that we've gotten this stupid over pronouns and people identifying. In fact, I think if Donald Trump... You know, if Donald Trump really wants to win with the left, he should come out as the first female president. and you know, they would have to embrace him.
They would have to.
I mean,
Wouldn't believe him because it's Donald Trump.
But that makes it.
But yeah, that's calling people to the carpet because who he identifies as.
He should come out as you know, Laura Trump,
right.
First female president, and get the flags all changed and watch the left go absolutely berserk. Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
Come on, Donald. Listen to me, Donald.
Listen to Walt, Donald.
Yeah. I'm telling you. I'm speaking to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I handed you the story earlier when you got here. Transgender woman sues McDonald's for discrimination, claims incorrect pronouns used. Got hired. And then told them I'm transgendered. And then because they wouldn't say preferred pronouns, they wouldn't use the word that this person wanted them to use. And it sounds like there was some other ugly stuff that happened, which they should own. But yeah, this is lawsuits, what we see going on in college campuses and the government. So what's the deal with the Equality Act? And how are members of Congress dealing with this?
Well, I think there's so many issues. I like Louis Gohmert is an example. Louis Gohmert is in our camp on this, and I think there are a few really good people fighting to squash this thing, which would be so devastating to the normal human being population.
Yeah.
And would just really, I see it as just ruining kids because it has no age limit. And so they would have to do do breast surgery on girls. They would have to do genital surgery on boys, no matter what age. I mean, there's no limits here. This is like open the gates.
It's like the New York abortion law, right? Literally, right up to the moment of delivery, and according to the current governor of Virginia, maybe even after, which is infanticide. I mean, the insanity. Again, I keep referencing Romans 1. This is what it looks like. You want to know what a given over mind looks like, or a given over nature, or a given over nation? You're looking at it. But do most members of Congress, do they get it? Or what? Like, what are the people on the left? Because you testified.
Yeah. I would say right now there's probably almost 50% of the people believe that the bill is good 47%.
Because we want to treat everybody equally and everybody has equal rights.
Yeah, I mean, it's the terminology's wrong. But, you know, if they can't it's crazy because if they can't kill the baby out of the womb, they're going to kill him afterward with being transgender.
Yeah, man.
I mean, so this is another – to me, this whole transgender thing for young people is just another abortion, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we're aborting
– destroying who you are.
Yeah. I mean, it's a form of abortion that we should not tolerate.
Yeah.
And so I just think all the people who are administering cross-gender hormones, hormone blockers, should lose their license.
Absolutely. Well, it's child abuse.
It is, absolutely.
What kind of questions, what kind of reaction did you get from Democrats on the Hill?
Well, I didn't get any reaction from Democrats because they wouldn't come and listen to me speak. I had real good positive reactions from the Republicans who came to the breakfast. And
cowards. They're just cowards.
Yeah, well, they don't want to, you know, I'm not their friend.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not in their camp.
You're not going to confirm their existing bias and their existing position. They won't listen.
So I'm going to speak the truth. The truth is that men can't become women. And the only people that can misgender today are transgenders. They misgender themselves.
Yeah.
But then if you correct them, then you're wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're hateful.
So they do misgendering all day long. And they can switch. You know, I saw a badge today at a grocery store, and it said it or something like that. I mean, it's like people have got all these different things.
Sure.
And then,
what about Republicans? How did they react?
Well, you know, I think they're a bit scared. I don't think they know how to deal with their constituents. Privately, they really want to squash it. But whether they have the backbone to stand up and push for that, I know Gohmert and Debbie Lasko of Arizona and others are really out there and pushing for it. I don't know about how many others have that kind of backbone and believe in strongly enough to push it back. There are probably many more
that
I don't know about.
Yeah, I mean, it's just shocking what's going on. When you hear a story, and I want to talk to you in the last segment about Jamie Shoup, who's a friend of yours who's got a similar experience in terms of the issue of transgenderism. But when you see somebody, one of the things that breaks my heart the most recently is Desmond. Have you seen the little 10, 11, 12-year-old boy?
Yeah, yeah.
Good Morning America. And his parents are 100% behind him. And he's showing up in bars where he's up on a stage. These are adult locations. And he's showing up on the stage. How do you react to stuff like that? Especially given because this started for you when you were really young. You see a little boy like Desmond.
It's child abuse. You know, it's pure and simple child abuse. And the fact that there are people who are celebrating this, you know, I'm sorry. This is probably the most, but they have no idea what they're going to see out of these children
right.
15 and 20 years from now, because they're going to be on the radio going, you know, my parents took me to a bar. It ruined my life.
Yep.
What it's going to be. They're just going to be sitting
We'll
where
see
I
if
am.
The crowd, the studio audience at the Good Morning America, see how they're cheering when Desmond maybe takes his own life one day. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with my good friend Walt Heyer, former transgender, and Walt's been an activist and his wife by his side for years, speaking the truth about this, pointing people to Christ, pointing people to the truth behind the lies of transgenderism. Give out the websites and tell us about your books right quick, Walt.
Yeah, sexchangeregret.com. I've got 6 books. The latest one, Trans Life Survivors, has the stories and research. Paper Genders gives the history going back many, many years on how this all got started. It was started actually by 3 people who were pedophile activists.
Yeah, man.
You know, it wasn't started because people were born transgender. It started because people liked the idea of having relations with young boys.
Yeah.
And so this is the mindset that we're dealing with, and it's morphed into this total insanity of where we are today.
Total insanity of where we are, and it's not slowing down.
No.
I mean, it's picking up steam.
Yep.
I mean, the stories get more widespread, whether it's athletics, the story I just mentioned a minute ago about the woman suing McDonald's for discrimination, claims incorrect pronouns used. That's happening on college campuses all over the place. We were just talking about amazing Desmond, this little boy that they're trotting out in front of a Good Morning America to thunderous applause. And it's child abuse. We keep talking about that. What about the whole, we were talking about this just briefly off the air on the break, but the suicide rates.
Yeah.
So what happens when somebody goes down the transgender road? What happens to the suicide rate?
Well, what we're dealing with is people who need psychotherapy and they're depressed. You know, what we know is the basic component of a person who identifies as the opposite gender is anxiety and depression. but they never treat either.
Yeah.
You know, they give them hormones, which oftentimes does suppress some of the anxiety, but doesn't treat the depression. So what we find is, and this has been written up many, many times, The Guardian in 2004 wrote it up and said, sex change surgeries are ineffective and lead to suicides. So, you know, it's out there. This is not just me.
And happy, fulfilled people don't commit suicide.
And happy, fulfilled people, and people who don't go
through
this,
healthy people,
don't have a 41% attempted suicide rate. So if it's really working for them to go through this, then they should have the same identical attempted suicide rate as the normal population,
sure,
general population.
Right. What a great point.
But it don't. But it's 41.
And what do you say when they say, well, that's because you guys? There's a high suicide rate because you don't accept transgender people.
No, the truth is because no one is treating their comorbid disorders, which is dissociative disorders and separation anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, body dysmorphia disorder. There are many disorders that everybody just wants to ignore in this population, and that is what's causing them to commit suicide, because nobody is addressing their comorbidities and dealing with the underlying issues that are causing them. I was, because of the sexual abuse, most people find that that morphs into a dissociative disorder. It's not multiple personalities. It's just an additional comorbid disorder that needs effective treatment.
Yeah, yeah, such an important point. This is I want to ask you about a friend of yours, Jamie Shoup. I saw this story a while back. It was published March 13th. I was America's first non-binary person. It was all a sham. Tell us about Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie, you know, he was one that came out first binary. He got it on his birth record, non-binary, and he was a very strong advocate for transgenders. And I've known him over the last few months, and I've watched him now backpedal. And he has now detransitioned back. He's now James. He's no longer Jamie. And he's saying that the whole non-binary thing was just a sham. It was just nothing to it. And it was a scam, a sham. He's ashamed that he went through it. And now he's found God. He calls himself a child of God. He's detransitioned, and he speaks the truth like I do. And he's written some articles in the Daily Signal, and a strong advocate for pushing back. He's a young guy. He was in the military.
Yeah.
He knows what he's talking about. He's been on both sides of this issue like I have, and he carries the same kind of voice I do. He's a good man. Check out his stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome, and so encouraging that that's happening. I would imagine that the forces of darkness, people on the other side of the issue, is it tough walking down this road?
Oh, no.
Speaking the truth?
They love me. I mean, I am. They adore me. Most of them carry my picture in their wallet and probably have it on their walls at home and go, Walt is the greatest guy.
I follow Walt right there on the back of the bumper sticker.
I mean, they love the heck out of me. So, you know, I don't hear from too many of them, you know, except Hurry Up and Die, Old Man, one of them wrote. And I wrote him back and said, well, thank you for your note. Just be patient. That'll happen.
How do you explain? I mean, you're a very joy-filled guy.
Yeah.
And you deal with this darkness, and you have for literally decades now. But how do you stay that way? How'd that happen?
Well, it's Jesus. You know, because what happens is out of this, I get to see lives transformed and redeemed and restored, like Jamie's, like the pharmacist that I met a little over a year and a half ago. He came to me at a conference. He's a female, and he says, you know, this was the biggest mistake of my life. Can you help me? And I walked with him, and he's now detransitioned. He's back as his male self.
So when you say that, they detransition. They do as much as they can.
They do as much as
they can. But they can't do everything.
You can't. There's certain things you can't do. Yeah. Although you can, it's just not going to function like it used to.
Oh, I remember in The Guardian, the UK Guardian, they were following a story over there. First woman had a penile implant, and is it going to work? And then when she and her quote-unquote husband, whatever, had successful sex, that was like a top-of-the-fold front-page victory story, which is just so dark. And sometimes I get very cynical and very dismissive.
Yeah.
And just want to call names. But these are people that are all made in the image of God.
Yeah.
It's so distorted, so dark.
Yeah.
That's why the gospel is the central part of the message, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. No, and so I stay joyful because there are so many people that we've been able to help.
Yeah.
And I even get people that look at my website and then they'll write me a note and say, you know, I was thinking about doing this and I just went through your website, saw the stories. I'm not going to do this. I don't need to do this. And people, you know, I say, look, you can wear a dress if you want, you know, But don't go do surgery. Don't go listen. If you really want to stay healthy, don't go to one of those therapists that claim to be an expert. Because most of them are transgenders themselves. Now, where are they going to lead you?
That's of course.
The fox guarding the hen house.
That's right.
I mean, you know, I'm joy-filled because of the Lord. I'm joy-filled because of the people are finding redemption and restoration from a transgender life. And that is pretty darn exciting.
Amen.
And so that's where we live today.
We're talking to Walt Heyer, my good friend, that's a former transgender himself and has been just a champion for truth and the gospel for all these years since then. What do you say? Because every time you've been on, I have people that will send me a note on Facebook or I'll get emails whose son or daughter is struggling with this issue. What do you say to parents of transgender people?
Yeah, you know, I would want them to sit the child down, regardless of their age, sit down and have a quiet moment. Don't start yelling. Don't start screaming. Don't get in an argument. Have a real heart-to-heart talk and say, how did this come about? Why don't you like who you are? Where did this start? How did you get the, did you get it off the internet? Did a neighbor cross-dress you? Were you sexually abused? What happened?
Yeah.
Because something has to happen, Steve, to cause people to not like who they are. So if we can find out what it was that happened that caused them this distress and to not like themselves, then we have that opportunity to work with them so that they can find joy and peace in the way God had made them. But these are damaged goods. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
about
oh yeah.
It. They're damaged.
Very broken.
Something happened, and whether it's a psychological issue, I've seen so many different stories where both parents were just not available. They were drug addicts or alcoholics, or they were in a mental hospital. They were left alone. They were passed around from foster home to foster home. They were physically abused. They were emotionally abused or sexually. Something happened. And when I work with the 100% of the time, this is amazing, Steve, 100% of the time when I have the opportunity to work with somebody, they can identify the moment,
wow,
the event, the time, the situation that caused them to not like who they are and elect to identify as a transgender person as a way to escape that pain. It's a way to escape and not feel that pain.
Would you say, do you have a feel for the average age of when that's happened?
No, because it happens anywhere from, you know, what I've seen from 5 to 15 years old is probably where it is. And interesting enough, people that I work with from about 5 to 7 years after having a complete gender reassignment surgical job done, they start to have regrets. And they begin to contact me usually 10, 12, 14, 15 years out. Sometimes earlier, I've had them contact me as early as 3 weeks after the surgery and said, this was a mistake.
Wow.
Can you help me? I've had them as two people 30 years after the reassignment surgery say, it took me 15 years to admit this was a mistake, but it's always been a mistake. Can you help me? So.
Wow.
The age groups run anywhere from teens to as high as 71 years old.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. Are there any other, I mean, besides you and your website, which is, again, what's the website? SexChangeRegret, is it .com?
Yeah.
SexChangeRegret.com. Are there any other resources? Is that?
Yeah, there. You go to my website and you'll see there are other now springing up websites helping people detransition. Fourth Wave Now is one of them that works with young, primarily young girls in their teen years. There's other ones that are working. There's more and more now because there's quite a few more people that are detransitioning.
Yeah, that are coming out
it's
of that.
It's exploding. I mean, at the time that they're pushing this, we've got more people coming out the other end saying this was not right. This ruined my life, and they want help to detransition.
And praise the Lord, Walt, that he's obviously been using you. Because how long have you been speaking out on the issue now?
About 10 years.
10 years. And when the truth gets out there, it's the truth that'll set you free.
Absolutely.
But if you never hear the truth, you're going to stay captured by that deception and by that brokenness.
Amen.
Walt Heyer, thanks for being here, buddy.
Always a pleasure.
Always great to see you.
I'm glad
we get to hang out and have dinner tonight and with Casey and with Gina, and we'll just have a great time.
Right.
SexChangeRegret.com is the website, SexChangeRegret.com. Facebook.com.
Hey,
Walt Heyer, thanks, buddy. Great having you in here. He's 78. He acts like he's 8.
Yeah.
That's a great energy level. We'll be back tomorrow with Tate Cockrell, one of my favorite Christian counselors. He's here on staff at Southeastern Baptist. A great topic tomorrow. We're going to talk about child-centered parenting and child-centered homes, which is why we have this whole nation of entitlement. That's going to be a great show. That'll be tomorrow. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you then. And like my dad always said, ever forward.